Thank you, and thank you all for coming. So as all of us, I'm sure, here know, phosphorus is a big environmental and agriculturally relevant element for many reasons. So we mine phosphate rock, of course, to apply it as fertilizer. And while some of this fertilizer is taken up by the crop, it's recycled, perhaps fed to livestock, which makes waste and then is reapplied as fertilizer. Much of the phosphorus that we're applying is, of course, ending up in the soil, highly retained, primarily by iron and aluminum oxides. And much of it also is running off into our water supplies. And everyone's familiar with the eutrophication problems that this can cause, such as fish kills and massive algal blooms. Some of you may have even seen water advisory signs like we have at some of our state parks in Delaware, warning not to drink the water because it could contain toxins that are harmful to human health. And so we have so many scientists trying to address these issues, but one of the biggest problems that we face with methodology is identifying the forms of phosphorus that are in the soil itself. So there's literally hundreds of forms of phosphorus that can occur in soils. We have all of our secondary minerals, which are primarily composed of calcium, iron, and aluminum phosphates. We have various adsorbed forms of phosphorus, which can be mineral or amorphous oxide bound and can exist in a variety of bonding configurations. And then, of course, we have all of our organic phosphorus compounds. So phosphorus that's bound to soil organic matter, microbial biomass P, biological molecules from degrading plant and animal residue. So traditionally, to measure these types of, to measure what forms of phosphorus exist in soil, we've used sequential extractions, which pose some certain problems. Of course, when we're introducing a chemical to the soil, we have the potential to alter the chemical forms that are actually there. And these are usually operationally defined techniques, meaning that we don't necessarily define these are defined by what extractant we're using, and this can be loosely related to a form of phosphorus, say aluminum-bound phosphorus, but that doesn't mean we're capturing all of that particular form. And so there's some spectroscopic techniques that we can use to analyze phosphorus, like NMR and IR spectroscopies, and these are very useful tools. But again, when we're measuring in soils, there are some inherent problems there. So iron and manganese that are ubiquitous in soils have spectral features that typically overlap with phosphorus in IR and NMR spectra. And so one technique that we're using to overcome some of these challenges is a combination of X-ray fluorescence and X-ray absorption near-edge spectroscopy. So just to give you a quick schematic of how we take these measurements, we have a soil sample, which we embed in an epoxy resin. We thin section that to about 30 microns, take it to a synchrotron light source, and hit it with X-rays. So what you see here in this middle picture is about a 5 by 5 millimeter section of this soil sample. So we've scanned the sample with X-rays to assess the distribution of certain elements. In this particular map, you can see phosphorus in red, aluminum in green, and silicon in blue. And so once we've identified these phosphorus hotspots, we can kind of zone in to that particular area, hit it with more X-rays to get a Zane spectra. And just like you and I have a fingerprint to distinguish ourselves from each other, a Zane spectra will look different for each form of phosphorus. And just to give you guys some ideas of what I'm talking about, with some of the more apparent features that are shown for certain phosphorus minerals. For any calcium phosphate mineral, we see these post-edge shoulders, which are highlighted in pink. For any oxidized iron phosphates, we see a pre-edge feature, like is shown here in blue. And for aluminum phosphates, we can typically identify those based on where their secondary peaks are and what those features show. So this technique, like any technique, has its advantages and limitations, but the primary reason that we're interested in using it is that we can use heterogeneous environmental samples like soils without chemical alteration. And we can get down to a good spatial resolution as well. So in this study, most of the results that I'm presenting today have been taken at a 10 micron resolution. So in some cases, this will examine individual particles, and we can get smaller spatial resolutions as well, depending on what beamline you're working at. But of course, there's limitations. Low concentrations are challenging, so it's ideal to have, what we've learned is about 800 ppm phosphorus if you're going to take a sample to a synchrotron and do these types of studies. And as anyone in here who's ever done phosphorus stains can tell you, organic species are particularly difficult to distinguish. Again, as I mentioned before, there's hundreds of forms of phosphorus that can exist in soils. So how do we narrow down the standards that we're going to use to compare our results to from our samples? And we can get a good idea of that by getting a good characterization of our soil. So really the objectives of this study are to determine the capabilities and limitations of synchrotron-based techniques, micro X-ray fluorescence, and micro X-ray absorption spectroscopy for measuring soil phosphorus speciation. There's been very few studies that have done this in soils, and there's been a lot of technological advances within the past few years that are allowing us to make some nice strides with measuring phosphorus in soils. So for this study, we've collected soils from throughout the Mid-Atlantic region. I'm going to talk about three in particular today that have a wide variety of chemical and physical properties. And of course, we've taken them back to the lab to do some soil characterization, get an idea of the mineralogy of the soil. We've done some desorption studies to see how tightly that phosphorus is retained before taking them to the beamline. And we've worked at Stanford Synchrotron Radiation Light Source beamlines 14-3 and 2-3 to do our XRF and X-ray absorption spectroscopy measurements. So just to give you an example of the wide variety of characteristics in these soils, I think you can even see it based on our slides that we have mounted. This lay field soil, which is the first one I'll talk about, is very low pH. It's very sandy. And although it does have high total phosphorus, but also very high malic 3 extractable phosphorus or plant available phosphorus. Whereas when we look at this Davidson soil, we have a little bit higher pH. We have, again, very high total phosphorus, but only about 27 ppm of that is considered plant available. And in this soil, we have particularly high aluminum and iron content. This is an estimate of the amorphous iron and aluminum oxide content, which is relatively high as well. So an additional kind of metric that we've added to this study that I don't think has been used before in any kind of phosphorus speciation study is taking our slides and running X-ray fluorescence at both a tender energy X-ray beamline and a hard energy X-ray beamline. So the beamlines that we typically run our phosphorus samples at are able to measure phosphorus, silicon, and aluminum distribution, which are both, these are both important elements that correlate with phosphorus in many cases. However, the important elements, calcium and iron, are not included in these measurements. So we've taken our slides to a hard energy X-ray beamline so that we can see calcium and iron, and then we correlate these maps based on the presence of silicon because you can see that both of these collect silicon. So hopefully in this map here, you can even see just how easy it is to kind of match these up visually by where the particles are. Here's a hot spot with high phosphorus that corresponds perfectly with this hot spot of iron, which is verified by the Zane spectra that show a pre-edge feature that's typical of iron. So I'm going to go through all three of those soils that I talked about earlier, and they're all going to be set up kind of like this, where I have some of the general characteristics here, and then I'll have a map showing the distribution of phosphorus in red, aluminum in green, and silicon in blue on top, and it will point out specific hot spots, and they'll be labeled as points within. Okay, and then the bottom map will have the distribution of silicon in purple, calcium in yellow, and iron in aqua. And so these Zane spectra that are shown on the right-hand side of each slide will correspond to these points. So this point one here corresponds to this point in the top map and bottom map. So as you can see, in our first soil, we were able to identify a couple of spots, and this is just a few out of a very large sample. So there's actually quite a bit more showing the correlation of phosphorus with calcium very clearly. You can see in points 1 and 2 in the Zane spectra, we see that post-edge shoulder. In point 3 here, you can see a correlation of phosphorus with iron, which is verified by this pre-edge feature, which we see in the Zane spectra, that corresponds likely to phosphates warped to some kind of iron oxide. I have ferrihydrite here as an example, but we won't get too specific with that. And then in point 3, we see point 4, we see phosphorus correlated well with aluminum, and again, this is likely indicative of a phosphorus sorbed to an aluminum oxide because there's not many features in the secondary region. So contrasting that with a completely different type of soil that has much higher iron and aluminum content, we were able to see in this map that, again, we do have a couple of points that show apatite. So these points 1 and 2 are co-located with calcium, and these show very nice peaks corresponding with that of apatite. I'd like to point out here really quickly, too, when we're doing a microspectroscopic study like this with a light element like phosphorus, it's very difficult to avoid self-absorption. So when I'm showing you these spectra, it's important to look at the peak position and not necessarily the peak intensity. Just a disclaimer. And then in this map, you can see in points 3, points 4, and points 5, these are correlated very well with iron. And when we looked at the spectra for this, as opposed to the one that I showed you in the previous slide that looked like it was sorbed to an iron oxide, this shows many more features in the secondary region that correspond very well with stringite. So this means that we've been able to identify not only sorbed phases to iron oxides, but also mineral phases of iron phosphates. This is the last soil that I'll show you the results for. This was a soil that was over 50% clay. It had very high total iron and aluminum oxide. It was almost 9% iron. And the Zanes analysis showed one apatite hotspot, but then the rest of these hotspots for phosphorus showed a pre-edge feature indicating that this was a phosphorus sorbed to an iron oxide. And one thing I will point out here, since this was a very high clay soil and our spatial resolution was about 10 microns, we weren't able to do the correlation studies quite as well. So that's something to take into consideration if you're thinking about doing these studies. If you have a very high clay soil, you may want to reduce that beam size a little bit if you can still get good spectral resolution. So what we've learned from this study is that micro-XRF is a very useful tool for phosphorus to correlate its presence with calcium, iron, aluminum, and silicon if we're able to access both these hard and tender energy beamlines. We were able to identify mineral and sorbed, several different mineral and sorbed forms of phosphorus, and we did this using the combination of XRF and XAS techniques. But again, it was very difficult to distinguish organic species, so organic speciation is at this point probably better left to something like NMR. And then in our study, we found that about 800 ppm was necessary for us to locate and measure enough hotspots in about a day period. So that's something to consider for these types of analyses. So I'll have to give a plug really quick here for a new beamline that's going to open at Brookhaven National Lab. They're actually taking proposals right now, and we're hoping to see some improvements in data, some even further improvements, as they have a more stable X-ray source and higher flux and improved beamline optics specifically for measuring phosphorus, so that hopefully in the future we'll be even better able to distinguish these forms and maybe even get into the XS region eventually so that we can get more specific information about phosphorus bonding, like next nearest neighbor, bond distances and coordination number. But for right now, I think these studies have a variety of applications for looking at phosphorus tracking of a fertilizer in the environment or specific instances where you know you're going to be looking at mineral and sorbed forms of phosphorus in the environment. So thank you. I'll take any questions if we have, I'm sure we have time. Mike. So we have collected bulk zanes for these samples, but they were very difficult to distinguish based on what we have observed. I can get that data for you. There's some correlation, but I think especially the soils in which there's iron and aluminum bound, where there's phosphorus bound to the iron and aluminum oxides, because those are harder to tease out in the linear combination fitting, that those are a little bit more difficult to compare. But we definitely plan on doing a comparison study of this.
Conserve beam time by maybe putting this in ESEM and doing EDAX and kind of identify
We've actually tried that, and actually opposed to saving time for us, that's actually it's taken more time, I guess, because of the resolution you're talking about doing paired with SEM. Yeah, searching for phosphorus particles with SEM EDX can take hours and hours. I would suggest this is a quicker technique. And my suggestion that 800 ppm is doable in a day, that's also accounting for some of the, you know, beamline issues that we have to sort out during the experiment as well. So. That's what we're hoping for. We're actually going next week to try out some of their some of these improved beamline optics. We're hoping will help take care of a little bit of that self-absorption. Right. And my top question is, can you do linear combination fitting with these micro zanes? But it's just too hard because of the self-absorption. So, any other questions? Okay, Mike. Right, absolutely. So that was a balance of the amount of time that we had versus the resolution that we could get down to. I would like to go back and with that high clay soil particularly go at a smaller resolution, but then you've got to trade off with your spectral quality as well. So it's a balancing act. Mm-hmm. Can they still get pretty good spectral quality with that, or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Thanks again.
Thank you.
So I just realized that we had 3 Savannah Rivers and 2 Delawares, and that's a full house. So that's usually a winning hand. So, and this has been a winning session. So before we have our last speaker, let's thank all the speakers for their efforts.